Hello, everybody. Welcome to the latest installment of Shooting the Bull. My name is Rhett Rollison, the men's assistant tennis coach at the University of South Florida. And joining me, as always, is our esteemed head bull, Ashley Fisher. Hello, Ashley.
Good evening, Rhett.
Yeah, we're excited to have just another great guest with us this week. We'd like to welcome to the show Stephen Huss. Stephen has quite a resume, and I did a little research on Stephen today, and the first qualifier to win the Wimbledon doubles crown in 2005, along with Wesley Moody. And, you know, a lot of times you can say that you maybe didn't have to beat all the top dogs to win the title, but get this. They beat the number 6 seed, the number 9 seed, the number 3 seed, the number 1 seed, and the number 2 seeds on the way to the title, including beating the Bryan brothers in the final. So when you say they earned that Wimbledon title, you could say they earned it. So Stephen has 4 career ATP doubles titles, had a career-high ranking of number 21, and maybe his most impressive feat on the tour is reaching the Sony Ericsson finals with Ashley Fisher. So I know he must have been playing some good tennis that week. And he was also an All-American at Auburn in 1998 and 2000. So, Stephen, welcome to the show.
Hi, Rhett. Hi, Ash. Thanks for having me on. I'm flattered you invited me. I've seen your previous guests, and you guys have a fantastic podcast. So thanks for having me on.
Well, we're glad to have you. And I'm going to start with the first question. What are your thoughts on how the ATP and the WTA tours have kind of handled this year with obviously the COVID environment and the restrictions that have kind of been in place?
Obviously, tennis is such a challenging sport to get out there. It's, you know, such a global sport and so, you know, very difficult to get done. So I think they've done from the outside looking in, I think they've done a great job of actually being able to hold some events this year. I thought for a while that there may not be any professional tennis this year, so that would be my take.
Yeah, Hussey, we certainly enjoyed seeing tennis back on TV. Thanks, appreciate your time and joining us. Hussey, can you take us back to how tennis began for you? You grew up in Melbourne, Australia. What was it that drew you to the sport?
It was my dad was a recreational player, and so I used to, hang with him and just go to the courts with him, and he introduced me to the game, and, just really enjoyed playing with him, and then grew from there and started to play more and more often. Like most kids, played a few different sports and had fun with a lot of them, but in my mid-teens, started to play only tennis. Very active, and Melbourne's a great town to play all sorts of sports, and there was certainly a lot of tennis around, so that's how I got into it.
And you played college tennis, you went to Auburn. What was that experience like, and how were you recruited? I'm sure things have changed a lot in the last 20 years.
I had an awesome time at Auburn. Back then I had no idea what I was going into. I didn't know anything about conferences or Power Fives or facilities or anything. It was just really, I got there from word of a really good friend, Lee Pearson, who was there a year earlier than me. And Lee sort of told the coach, my friend's in Melbourne and, he hasn't played really any ITFs or doesn't have much on paper, but, he's about the same level as me. And Lee was doing pretty well for the team, since then the Auburn coach Eric Shaw, who was a fantastic help to me, he's told me that I was the biggest risk he ever took, just because he didn't know anything about me, and he was just basically going on the word of Lee, who was my friend, who probably had good reason to embellish a little bit, but luckily it worked out for all of us really well.
Certainly did, and so it sounds like you had more of an organic upbringing where you played multiple sports, and nowadays there's a lot of emphasis on traveling around and playing the ITF tour and getting a lot of matches. What's your stance or your view on kind of the ideal entry into tennis sort of through the teen years?
My take on it is that there's not one way to do it. I don't think that anyone can say, you know, this is the way you have to do it if you want to make it to the top levels. You know, I certainly got a lot of knowledge around the American women who have come up, and you know, someone like Sophia Kennan, you know, played somewhere in the area of 400 plus matches between the ages of 9 and 12. Someone like Madison Keys was sort of in the area of about 200 matches, and then you look at Venus and Serena, and they played zero matches because they never played junior tournaments. All four of them, different approaches and different amounts of matches, and all four of them, you know, really, really top level players. So there isn't one way to make it, but I certainly like kids playing different sports. I think it's great for movement and coordination. And there's certainly been some research recently through the American development model that says early specialization is not perhaps the way to go. And they sort of encourage playing a lot of sports, different sports, up until a certain point. So that's my thoughts on that, Ash.
Yeah, okay, mate. You know, we're a college program. You bring a lot of experience. You've worn many hats in tennis. You've played collegiately. You've coached in college, you've played professionally, you've coached professional players, and then you've coached for the USTA. I imagine that you would have had to do some college tennis pitches when you were a college coach. Now you don't have any real skin in the game. So, you know, what would be your view on college tennis? Who should go to college? Who shouldn't?
It's a loaded question, mate, but I think the majority of players should absolutely not only consider but go to college. I think there's certainly some phenoms that come through early and show that they're good enough for the highest level at a young age. But, you know, in this country, you know, we have players in, you know, top 10, top 20 ITF, you know, on the girls' side where I coach at the USTA, the majority of them do go to college. And so it's interesting when I come across, you know, international coaches who I speak with, and they have a, you know, they might have a player in the top 20 or the top 50 ITF, and they're all of a sudden the, you know, the big hope for that country, whether it's, you know, Australia or Sweden or some of the other coaches that I speak to. And I think the reality is it's a very tough transition to go straight from ITF juniors to ITF seniors. So I believe the college pathway is a really good pathway for almost everybody to go through, and a really good stepping stone to get to the highest level.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. I feel like if you get it wrong, it's a lot easier to rectify that decision. If you've gone to college, you could go and you could really tear it up and win a lot, make some friends, your game improves, and then you can turn professional after a year. But if you get it wrong the other way and you're out there a year under the belt traveling around and you realize you're not quite ready, or you're not mature, or the level's not there, then you're in a bit of trouble. It's hard to reverse that decision. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's just it depends on who you're talking to, and it's certainly horses for courses. Yeah, it sounds like the USTA has done a good job advising their players and encouraging them towards the college route. And then, you know, as I said, if they're good enough, they can turn professional. Well, let's switch gears here. And Rhett did a nice little tee up there talking about your Wimbledon run in 2005, where, I mean, you guys really just shocked the tennis world, and the first qualifier ever in singles or doubles to win it. You know, you also beat James Blake and Mark Merklin in the qualies, which was incredible. And the ninth seed, which Rhett mentioned, was a guy named Todd Woodbridge, who won Wimbledon 9 times. So, you know, just in all my years of following Wimbledon, and that's about 20, I've never seen a team have as close to a tougher draw as you guys had. And not only that, but at no point in the tournament did you guys look like you were going to lose. So it was just an incredible feat. Can you just take us through that run? I mean, what was it like? What was the lead up going into Wimbledon? I mean, I know you like grass, so you've probably had some good feelings about it, but what was the mindset going in? Did it did you feel like you were going to win the tournament? Did you had a chance to win it? I mean, were those thoughts there? Were you playing it match by match? Just talk us through that incredible 3 weeks.
Certainly, yeah, it's a good memory for me, obviously. And going into the tournament, I mean, I wasn't in the main draw of the lead-up tournaments beforehand, so I couldn't get into Queens or any of the other lead-ups before Wimbledon. So I went to London after the clay, and I stayed with a friend of mine there, James Smith, and he had a dodgy grass court around the corner from his house, and I used to go down there, and James was a good player himself, and he had a huge serve, so I got him to serve to me for probably half an hour every day on these dodgy grass courts, and he could serve probably 130 miles an hour. And so I got some good reps in there, and then I'd take the train up to Queens, and I can't remember who I got a badge off, but I got a badge off someone, and then it was off to the practice courts and try to practice with whoever was around, offside, onside, to try and get the reps in on grass before qualifying started the next week. So that was the lead up. I knew going into the tournament that I had a really good partner. Wes and I had played one challenger event earlier in the year and won it pretty convincingly. So I felt confident that I had a good partner, but you know, really the goal was to qualify and to get in the main draw and give ourselves a chance there. I mean, at no point was I thinking that we were going to win the event. And then I just got into a really good process, really good routine. I remember because we qualified, we were kind of the first team to play on the Tuesday. It's quite often the qualifiers play on the Tuesday. Most people play on the Wednesday, at least back then. So we won our first round, and actually you said we never looked like losing. Well, we were 5-1 down in the first set of the first round, so it didn't look too rosy at that point. We ended up losing the first set 7-6, so we came back in that set, but we still lost it. And then yeah, from that point on, we got on a bit of a roll, and that match in the second round against Woodbridge and Bupati was a huge one. And I would go and scout the team that we were going to play next because we were a day ahead. So I would sit there with, pen and paper and write things down and try and get a good idea of tactically what I wanted to achieve. And I was able to do that for all the matches throughout the tournament except for the final. So that was a really good process for me. And then I'd go staying in Fulham Broadway at a dodgy little hotel there, and then I'd go down to the internet cafe, and I'd write the game plan down to I'd email it to Peter Lumsden, my coach that was in Australia, and so I did that, so I got into this routine of preparing, and then the major thing I took from watching Woodbridge and Bupati was I decided then that I thought the other team that they played in the first round, which was Graydon Oliver and Jared Palmer, so it was a really tough first round. I thought that they were too worried about what Woodbridge was doing around the net and were trying to go around him and beat him. And I said to myself at that point, I'm not going to beat myself against Todd. I'm going to, if he crosses and takes the ball and puts, dominates the match and we lose, then that's okay. But I kind of decided then he's not going to take me out of my mindset. I'm going to stick with my game. I'm going to volley cross court. I'm going to return cross court. And that's what I did, and it worked out really well. And from that point on, got into that routine, scouting matches, email away my plan to my coach, and then go out and perform. And so it was a really match-by-match process. And then, I think the semi against Bjorkman and Muni was probably the best match that we played. They were, Fish, they're an incredible team and really difficult to play against, and very good on grass. We won that 7-6 in the fourth. That was our closest match. And then actually Todd Woodbridge, who we'd beaten in the second round, really helped me before the final, because the semis were played concurrently, so I wasn't able to watch and scout. And I didn't know Bob and Mike at that point. So I asked Todd in the locker room, I said, do you have anything on these guys? Can you tell me how they play? And he was like, yeah. And I said, righty does this, lefty does this. And he basically kind of gave me that blueprint, which as I look back, I think was incredibly important, because I was able to formulate my plan, email it away, and stick to the same process and the same routine. And then the final was, I mean, you were there, Fish, you saw how well we were playing and how well the match went. So it was a really cool experience, and obviously something I'll never forget.
Well, that's incredible. mate. A couple of things that stood out for me was when you said every match you had something that you were going to focus on, and then you would email away the game plan to Lamo. So what? Give us some examples of things that you were focused on and some tactical things that you and Wes were able to deploy.
Sure, yeah, well, I mentioned that one against Woodbridge Brew Party, and that was basically I wasn't going to worry about Woodbridge, you know, crossing and dominating the match because I felt like he was playing his own side incredibly well and not making errors, but he wasn't dominating the net, so I decided that I wasn't going to volley through him or around him, and I was just going to volley cross-court. And then, you know, Wes and I spoke, and we felt like, you know, Mahesh was the weaker volleyer in that pair. So any second, third ball, we were really disciplined about going, you know, to the weaker player. And then, you know, other examples were, I remember we played the Czech team and, you know, Shermak and Friedel, and, you know, it was like, okay, let's go to their backhand volleys as much as we can rather than their forehand volleys. So that was another one that I remember. And then, you know, Bjorkman, I remember, you know, Bjorkman had awesome, incredible returns, but he pulled his returns a lot, meaning he went across his body. So we played eye, and we pretty much almost always covered the pulling returns. And then with Max, I was very aware of his racket head because he used to chip lob quite a bit. So if I saw him in a grip, where he's going to hit the backhand, I could close. And if I saw him in a chip grip, then I was ready for the lob. And that was actually a little bit against Bob Bryan as well, the lefty. So you could see if he has an open racket face, you can't over-close. And if he has a closed racket face, you can take middle. And so little things like that that, you know, you sort of pick up by watching, or, you know, you get some help from other players. So those are the sort of focuses of the match, but certainly it was very around what I talked about earlier, and that was I'm not going to go far outside of my game. So if we lose, it's because they've played well and they've beaten me, not because I've panicked or overplayed or worried about something that they're doing on the other side of the net. And that served me, you know, incredibly well. And obviously Wes is a, you know, we complemented each other very well because he's a real power player, power server, power hitter, which set me up around the net. And then, you know, my serve isn't great. It's a little better on grass because of the quicker surface. But Wes is a really good volleyer, so he was able to handle any attacks they sort of gave to him. So we just saw the ball really well on the grass, and those little tactical things, And the mindset throughout the tournament of not beating myself, not going too far outside of my comfort zone, were big keys to the success that I had as far as my level during that tournament.
You make it sound easy just looking at the racket face and deciding to close or guard for the lob, but it's happening in real time. It's not an easy thing to have that sort of awareness while it's actually the ball's in play. So that's why you're a slam champion. What about playing on some of the courts there? It's an iconic facility, the All England Club. It's really holy ground. It was your first time, I think, playing on centre court. And, you know, what sort of things did you do to make yourself more comfortable playing in that environment?
Yeah, that place is magic, as you know, Fish. I mean, that's just it's the pinnacle of tennis. I remember the first time I went there as a lucky loser. We lost the last round qualies, Lee Pearson and I, and we went to pick up our lucky loser badge, and we walked in and we were just awestruck. And I decided then that I am going to be main draw next year. And I remember I put the lucky loser badge in my wallet, and I looked at it every single day when I opened my wallet just to get back there and be in the main draw. So certainly a privilege to play at that place. And something that I did was when the schedule came out, I knew you obviously know what court you're on. So I would go to the court in the morning before the match, and I would just sit there and visualize a little bit and picture myself, you know, hitting first volleys and serves and returns and really visualize playing well. And I certainly remember when we played on center court in the quarterfinal, the referee, Alan Mills, took me out because I wanted to go. I think we were third on, maybe. And so I was there in the morning, and I asked Alan, can I go out to center court? And he said, sure, I'll give you a tour. And so he took me out there, and I wanted to make sure that I'd been there before that I walked on the court, so I wasn't, you know, perhaps 100% nervous, only 90% nervous. And when I went out there and just stood on the grass and looked around, I was very scared, certainly very scared. And I just thought, my goodness, this is the court that I've seen Edberg and Becker play on, you know, in the finals growing up. And I actually had to stay there. Alan left me there, and I said, can I stay a while? And he said, sure. And I had to stay there 20 minutes before I sort of calmed down and was able to, you know, visualize myself playing out there. But I certainly remember, you know, we broke for 2-1 when we went out there, and I hit a good return, and it was the guy missed a low volley. I think it was Mark Knowles missed a low volley. And then I just turned around to the back fence and just kind of was, you know, in my own mind. And then I looked at the ball boy after about 15 seconds to get the balls from him because it was my serve. And then he kind of looked at me quizzically. He didn't have any balls. And then I turned around, and, you know, it's obviously 2-1. It's a change of ends, and everyone's sitting in the chair, and I'm just standing out there by myself. So there was obviously some pretty heavy nerves still there at that point. But, you know, thankfully that was something I was able to manage throughout the tournament. Not get rid of, but manage. So, yeah, good fun.
Yeah, well, I tell me if I have this right. I vaguely recall you saying this.
Uh-oh,
that you're walking out. As you're walking out, you're walking behind Lodra and Knowles, and you heard Lodra say that he'd never played on center court, and that made you feel a little bit better.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, just before we got to the spot, you kind of walk through the members there, and then come across that that iconic quote there above the entrance to center court. And yeah, I did hear Lodra say, yeah, no, I haven't played on this court before. And I was like, oh, good. I'm not the only one. So, yeah, that did help.
Oh, good. I'm glad I got it right. You just said something really key there, managing your nerves. They didn't go away. You were able to manage them. And I recently listened to another podcast of yours, and you said something I really enjoyed. You talk about a moment in the fourth set of the final against the Bryan brothers. Can you just take us through that?
Certainly, yeah. We were a break up in the fourth. I think Wes was serving at 3-2 in the fourth, perhaps just an early break up, maybe 3-1 in the fourth. And I just, for the first time, I kind of looked up and around the stadium at the full stadium, and I just thought to myself, oh my God, you're going to win Wimbledon. I really felt pretty confident at that point. We hadn't lost serve in the match. And as soon as I did that and took it all in just for a moment there, you know, my whole body tensed up and I got incredibly nervous. But I sort of caught, I was aware of it right away that my whole body had tensed. And so I was like, all right, I got to pull myself together here. And then I looked down at the grass, and just kind of, I pointed my racket to the ground, and then I just reminded myself, I go, come on, Stephen, you're just playing doubles. You know how to play doubles. And so I brought myself back to the present moment, I believe, and then just reminded myself, you know, yes, this is Wimbledon. Yes, it's a big deal, but I know what I'm doing out here. I can play doubles. I know what I'm doing. And that was able to bring me back, and the nerves dissipated for me in that moment, which was huge because, geez, if someone had have had some, if they had have been monitoring my physiology at that point, there would have been some, would have been off the charts. So yeah, I was lucky I caught myself and was able to manage it.
Yeah, well, that's just an incredible example of match awareness and as you say, managing nerves. Hussey, what have you learnt now through coaching that you possibly wish you knew when you were playing?
A lot of things. I guess the first couple of things that spring to mind is I certainly would have invested in myself more throughout my career. I think you did a good job of that, particularly later in your career. But I always thought, oh, it's too expensive to bring a coach with me. And as I look back, you know, I should have paid for a coach. I should have paid for someone to help me because I would have improved more and my results would have been better, and therefore I would have earned more money to pay for that coach. So that's one thing. I was too focused on the points and on defending points, where I should have been focused on the process of improving and getting better as a tennis player. It's a bit harder for us from Australia, just because we're so far from home. It's not like we can pop home for a couple of weeks. So that makes it harder, but I just stayed on the road almost all the time and overplayed, played too many tournaments, didn't periodize my schedule enough in that way. And then I guess the third thing that comes to mind is just mentally, I could have done a much better job with the pressure and, you know, maybe anxiety. I don't know. That feels like a bit too strong of a word for me, because it wasn't like I was really anxious or really upset, but I did feel the pressure of week-to-week competing, and I never really got the help with that throughout my career. And I think I figured some things out for myself, you know, along the journey, but it would have helped to have some help with that. And I see that now with the kids that I work with and the players that I work with. There's a lot of pressure on them, especially with social media and everything's up in headlights, and you can't do anything without it, you know, without everybody knowing about it. So I think the pressure's been intensified, and I think the job of the coach is to reduce that anxiety in any way possible. So that's kind of what springs to mind.
We appreciate your honesty there. What was your favorite thing about working as a college coach?
I mean, the development of the kids, the team environment. Certainly loved the team environment and a group of, you know, I was on the men's side in college, and a group of guys coming together for a common goal. That was awesome. Just being on court, you know, I enjoyed the practicing, the developing, getting the players better, seeing them improve and seeing them, you know, both as people, you know, maturing, and also as obviously as tennis players, getting better results and really having breakthroughs with their game. That was so fun to see. So those were the main things.
Well, speaking of breakthroughs, when you were at Virginia Tech, and correct me if I don't have the exact numbers, but from memory, the program was ranked around 50 when you began. With you and Jim, who was the other coach there, you guys ended up moving to 16. And I don't remember it being with any additional recruits. It was sort of the same core guys. I mean, what was it that sort of went into that rise? How did you guys do that?
We had a fantastic team there. As far as, I mean, Jim Thompson is a quality coach and an even better person there at Virginia Tech. And so we worked together incredibly well to form a really good environment. And I think a couple of things that I noticed right away was mental toughness. I felt like that could really improve, and the guys bought into that, and the team really grew together from a competitive standpoint. So they became much better competitors, which made us much harder to play against and much harder to beat. And so we started winning some matches off grit that perhaps we wouldn't have won before. And then, like I mentioned before, I think the development we did on the court, when you add in the mental toughness and the resilience of the matches with the development of the players, and you know, we did. I think Jim recruited well, and I certainly helped with that. And we just had buy-in from the guys, and we had guys get better. We had guys, you know, start outside the lineup or start at six and end up at one. And we just had, you know, good buy-in and good day-to-day process, which, you know, I think one year we had five seniors. We graduated five seniors. So we had a pretty good core group together that grew and then set the culture for the new guys that came in. So It was great fun. I was there for 3.5 years, and it was, yeah, I mean, it's a great environment that you guys are in, and I hope you cherish it, and I'm sure that the players there are getting better and getting a lot out of it.
Yeah, we hope so. What advice would you have for someone playing college tennis now?
It really depends on what their goals are. I mean, we like to think that all the players that go to play college tennis want to be pros, but you know that's not the case. So you got to figure out what your goal is. But certainly, you have 4 years of some of the best years of your life, and I experienced it myself. So I know from that vantage point, and then I've also seen the guys come through and experience for themselves. They're unbelievable years, and if you put in, both academically and tennis-wise, you're going to have, those are going to be four of the greatest years of your life. And whether you're, if you want to go ahead and play pro afterwards, then you probably got to do a little more than some of the guys there. So that means taking extra individuals, hitting extra serves, maybe delving into the resources, whether that's analytics or whatever else there is to improve yourself, then certainly go ahead and do that. But even if you aren't going to go on and play pro, let's say you want to be an engineer or an architect or whatever it may be, then play the tennis, play it hard, get better, buy into the team and have the best possible 4 years that you can, because it's a wonderful ride, and the opportunity to do both, study and play, and then obviously the social scene behind it, which is fun as well. It's just an awesome environment to be in for those 4 years.
Well, Stephen, we appreciate your time. Just such great information, great honesty. I personally was kind of living vicarious through that story about you walking on center court for the first time and Alan Mills leaving you out there. And I was just kind of like, I was envisioning that. So I was living vicariously through that, and just such great honesty, and we appreciate your time. And I know you and Ash go way back, and I actually watched you guys play at the U.S. Open when I was there with the Damo and Krychek, when they had won the NCAAs. You guys were literally playing on the next court over. So it's kind of funny how things come full circle. I remember watching you guys back then, and Ash and I have become really good friends, and I know he thinks highly of you, and we appreciate you joining us, and just a great run. That Wimbledon story is something that I'll remember for a long time. We appreciate you joining us.
No problem. I've enjoyed it, and if I could, I'd love to just let the listeners know. Rhett, you and I don't know each other so well, but I do know Ashley, very, very well, and I know how invested and passionate Ashley is in what he does as a head coach. So good luck, guys.
Thanks a lot, Hussey. All the best, mate.
Well, Ash, your take on the conversation there, again, a lot of real raw honesty from him talking about that experience. I love the story about him just realizing, oh my gosh, I've got a chance to win Wimbledon. And if he wouldn't have gathered himself in that moment, it could have been a crash and burn situation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Hussey was a very relaxed guy on the court. He wasn't a guy that looked particularly animated. He sort of reminded me of Bjorn Borg a little bit, just that he looked ice cold always, but it's not the case. There's a lot going on. It's just an amazing awareness that he was able to be able to track his thoughts and realize that they weren't helping him at that point, and just notice the physical state that those thoughts put him in, and just get back to what was right in front of him. If I'm translating that, he anchored himself by looking at the ground, getting very present, and then committed just to something that he just called playing doubles. How to play doubles. As a coach, he's just a guy that's continued to invest in himself and just, apparently when he was at the USTA, he just took advantage of every single resource every day, whether it was analytics, whether it was working with their mental skills trainers, whether it was picking the brain of Jose Aguirre or other coaches. He's very curious. He wants to learn. He knows that he's never going to master this sport. None of us will. And it's a never-ending finish line. So you know, that's the way he's living his life. That's the way he's coaching, and he's done. We didn't get into it, but he's done a tremendous job with a lot of his athletes. He started out with Abby Spears and Raquel Copps Jones, and they were ranked about 50, 60 in the world in doubles, and they within 6 to 9 months they were top 10 players, and they stayed a legitimate top 10 team for many years. And then when he worked with Caroline Dolhide, she was young when he first began that working relationship, and she got inside the top 100, and yeah, he's just had a lot of success with anybody he's worked with, and just a tremendous coach and a tremendous guy, and that's what it's all about.
Well, as we close the show, I'd be remiss, Ash, if I didn't have you give a tip to our listeners and something they can maybe take to the court with them the next time they play.
Yeah, well, Hussey touched upon this. I always like to try to build off the expertise that our guests have provided. And he said he was scouting every match and taking notes. And so that's one good tip. But when you come up against somebody that you can't watch, which happened to him in the final, then go and find somebody that knows them. Pick somebody else's brain. Ask about their patterns, because Hussey says probably without talking to Todd Woodbridge, you know, maybe it's a different match. It's just the margins in tennis are so thin that if you can get one little attribute, look, the guy loves to go cross court with his backhand return. He's gonna do that on big points. He's gonna serve wide on big points. Just these little patterns that you can just lean on make such a huge difference. One point can change a match. So, just do your homework. Study your opponents and be very diligent. Have a game plan when you're going into matches.
You know, it's funny, Ash. You know, I don't care if you're one in the world or you're a 3-0 playing in a Suncoast League here in Tampa. We all have our tendencies, and, you know, it's funny when with some of the ladies and some of the juniors I work with, I ask them that. I'm like, you know, do you get some information on your player? Do you try to find out what their strengths, what their weaknesses are? Do you watch them in the warm-up? Do you see what their tendencies are? And so, you know, a lot of times I think that mindset, you know, they think that's only for professional tennis, that's only for college tennis. They don't realize that you can take those same skills to your USTA League matches.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the beauty of the sport, and there, I have so much respect when I see people like that are 60, 70 years old that are just still so professional, that are warming up, that are cooling down, that are taking notes. You know, it just regardless of your level, it's your choice as to how professional you want to be and how invested you want to be in your craft. So, you know, that's great advice, Red. And I particularly like how you said, notice somebody when they're warming up. You know, if you take a ball straight at somebody at the net and they take a big step to their left to hit a forehand volley, that's a pretty big sign that they prefer their forehand volley over their backhand volley. You know, those little things matter, and they mean something, and they can give you some insight into what's going to come.
Yeah, good tip as always, Ashley. And as we wrap up this show, again, we like to say a special thanks to Stephen Huss for his raw honesty. And as always, Ash, good to visit with you, and good to pick your brain as well. So we'll be back here soon. We've got some other guests lined up, and before you know it, we'll be back with a few other Shooting the Bull episodes. But for now, we're gonna leave it at that. For University of South Florida men's head coach Ashley Fisher, this is volunteer assistant Rhett Rollison, and we will see you down the line. Thank you for joining us for Shooting the Bull.